Blog Talk Radio.
Tired of you. Tired of you chased by the police and arrested. Need a spot where we can kick it. Spot where we belong. That's just for us. You ain't gotta get all dressed up and be Hollywood. You know what I mean? Where the f*** go when we die? Ain't no heaven for a thug. That's why we go to Thug Mansion. That's the only place where thugs getting free, and you gotta be a G at Thug Mansion. A place to spend my quiet night. Time to unwind, so much pressure in this life of mine. I cried times I once contemplated and would have tried, but when I held that, all I could see was my mama's eyes. No one knows my struggle, they only see the trouble. Not knowing it's hard to carry on when no one loves you. Picture me inside the misery of poverty. No man alive has ever witnessed struggles I survived. Praying hard for better days, promise to hold on. Me and my dogs ain't have a choice but to roll on. We found a finally spot to kick it, where we could drink liquor and no one pick us over tricks. A spot where we can peace. And even though we G's, we still visualize places that we can roll a piece. And in my mind's eye, I see this place. The players going fast. I got a spot for us all, so we can ball at Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy, little
go.
Nothing but peace.
I wanna go.
The street passion.
A place where death doesn't reside, just thugs who collide, not the start beefers. No cops rolling by, no policemen, no homicide, no chalk in the streets, no reason for nobody's mama to cry. See, I'm a good guy, I'm trying to stick around for my daughter. But if I should die, I know all of my album supporter. This whole year's been crazy, ask the Holy Spirit to save me. Only difference from me and Ozzy Davis, gray hair maybe. Cause I feel like my eyes saw too much suffering. I'm just 20 some odd years, I done lost my mother and I cry tears of joy. I know she smiles on a boy, I dream of you more. My love goes to Afeni Shakur, cause like Ann Jones, she raised the ghetto king in a war, and just for that alone she shouldn't feel no pain no more. Cause one day we'll all be together sipping heavenly champagne where angels soar with golden wings and Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy, little Tennessee, we're back and cool every hour, cause it's all good. No stress from the world outside.
Mama, don't cry, your baby boy's doing good. Tell the homies I'm in heaven and they ain't got hood. Seen a show with Marvin Gaye last night. It had me shook, dripping peppermint snot with Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke. Then some lady named Billie Holiday sang, sitting there kicking it with Malcolm till the day came. Little Sasha show grown, tell a lady in the liquor store that she forgiven. So come home, maybe in time you understand. Only God can save us when Miles Davis cutting loose with the band. Just think all the people that you knew in the past that passed on, they in heaven found peace at last. Picture a place that they exist together. There has to be a place better than this in heaven. So right before I sleep, dear God, what I'm asking, remember this face, save me a place in Thug Mansion. Remember this face, save me a place in Thug Mansion. Up in Thug Mansion.
Staring at the walls, the side of the cage with his cap.
wasted all my ways and bonds. In time I learned a few lessons. Never fall for riches. Apologies to my true sisters. Fall for bitches. Help me raise my black nation. Reparations to do. It's true. Caught up in this world, I took advantage of you. So tell the babies how I love them. Precious boys and girls. Born black in this white man's world. And on the road.
Stayed on my bumper when I should have been at home getting ready for school. in the morning, but I was always there, even though I was yawning, trying to sell the candy I sold at the store on the corner. Lost at my house again in a stolen car with my friends. Well, I end up in prison, my brother got killed. Then we both had kids when we was down serving beers. Still blessed to pick up a phone, call my mom and dad. To make a long story short, if it quack, then it's a duck. Keep your mind out them streets and your head in them books. Come on with the hook.
Black man kill a white man, they sentencing him to death. White man kill a black man, then scream about self-defense. Break it down to manslaughter with all of the evidence. Ever since I've been here, been nothing but been here. I done backed about the game just to pursue my career. So I'ma say this loud and clear. Motherfuck the white man. Ku Klux Klan talk shit, but they don't want to talk shit. Niggas today ignorant, festing my left generation. Squeeze triggers with no hesitation. When I count enough altercations, rapping is my occupation. But I still ride with my pistol though, and drop a top a low low so I can feel a wind blow. Pull up on side of white folks, smile, show every goal I got. Smoking on some sticky sticky, but y'all like to call it pop. Young black man calling shots, middle finger to all the cops. Suck a nigga dick pulling your Glock out for a traffic stop.
Here's go to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and house me. Gon' slam me down and round for me just to put on handcuffs and show me with resistance. But they told me throw my hands up. Here's go to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and house me. Gon' slam me down and round for me just to put on handcuffs and show me with resistance. But they told me throw my hands up. If it be a tragedy, y'all know what they gon' do. And these niggas out here talking about a nigga hating on them. Fuck you talking about a nigga hating on you. Bitch ass nigga, you know who hating on you? The DA and the judge hating on your bitch ass nigga. The police and all that type of shit, nigga. Fuck you talking about a nigga hating on you behind a hoe. A real nigga bad to piss on.
Black power, black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned in to In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner, your co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and myself, Engineer on the Ones and Twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina Oshu. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Again, that's 845-277-9266. This is the People's Radio. You can press the number one at any time to participate. Tonight's topic, a walk through Black history, ancient style, part three. We're going to go ahead and open the lines right now for our host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner. Black power, can you hear me, comrade?
Right on, Black Power. That's what's up. Straight
Ooh,
up, yeah.
Black Power.
Ooh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. As always, we our aim and goal primarily is to politically educate our people. We consider ourselves to be politicized, and the sky's the limit. As far as that goes, anyway. But for those who don't know, those who don't understand, those who don't fully understand. What we mean by raising the conscious level of our people beyond the usual orthodox miseducation or being misinformed through the schooling system, even in politics, dealing with political science, political views, media, all these different things that go into shaping one's understanding in terms of education on various levels. Of course, in the schooling system is where you receive your main education. And to be miseducated is to be misinformed. And to be misinformed is to be misguided. And of course, to be misguided actually eventually ends up being enslaved. They so-called released us from slavery, physical slavery. But there's another form of slavery that still exists. And so we're in the struggle, in a protracted struggle against that to bring about the eradication of that form of mental slavery. So this is part of the political education process. And of course, part of political education process is understanding one's history, historic role in world civilization, our culture, where we come from, who we are as a people. Eventually, a portion of us ending up here in the hells of America. And we know it as the United Snakes of America. And we spell that America with a small A, a small M, a small I, and we hit the shift button so it can be KKK in all three letters, and then take the shift off and back to a small I. And that's how we know and understand America, because of the irreconcilable relationship that we've had with the state. Those who established this place as a legal entity, a business entity, a corporation, and who had become the stakeholders and the stockholders. And part of that was possessing human beings as they do, as though they were no different than possessing cattle, from which is where the word chattel had come from, and therefore chattel slavery. So, you know, we're going to continue this part three. And, you know, we sort of left off around, you know, from, you know, explaining this is ancient Europe, or Europe and the ancient civilization, the ancient people there, you know, formerly West Asia, and then we move into West Asia. I'd mentioned the civilization of Elam, which would be modern day Iran, the black civilization that existed there 7,000 years ago. And let us sort of, you know, explain that what we mean, the terminology or the definition. You know, a conglomerate of ideology, philosophy, not just building some exquisite palace or some monument or temple and letting that be defined as civilization. From the indigenous people perspective, which is juxtaposed to the white understanding, the European understanding of civilization based on the materialist factor, historical materialism, whereas, you know, African people, non-whites, non-European-minded people established a foundation that was based on the way of life, laws and codes, and how to relate to one another as individuals in the larger society, in the village, in the community, in the town, in the city, in the states that were built and formed, which gave us the ability to build, you know, monuments and structures and temples and pyramids and palaces and things of that nature. And so the Europeans have dug up our shit all over the world, and I, you know, there's a law of nature. You know, one starts off in a basic state, and of course, you know, progresses over time. And so the Europeans have gotten to the stage where they now, you know, they've had their turn with science and technology, and they've created the type of science and technology, you know, to understand how to date things using particular type of chemistry or chemical factors. Well, anyway, just for the record, its ability to, you know, to explain the antiquity of things, but you know, 6,000-7,000 years, 10,000 years, finding stone walls and monuments that were built around the world. These were civilizations that had come into fruition in the physical form, what the eye can see. And so none of these civilizations the white folks had built. There's a continual obsession with ancient civilizations. And now, as I said, you know, the Europeans have, you know, escalated their understanding using science and such thing as a mitochondrial DNA and whatnot. But in West Asia, the ancient man, ancient black man, the skeletal remains of black people, 100,000, 200,000 years ago, and down through the time and formation of the earth and the different geographical transformations of these regions and stuff, you know, through the years. And so maybe like the past 100, well, let's say like 200-300 years, you know, they traveled through these regions and found these monuments in places like in Iran and Iraq and Syria and Palestine, what we know to be as Turkey. So these ancient civilizations, these were civilizations that were built and fabricated. What I mean by fabrication is like a fabric. You know, you're taking a fabric and fabricating it into a design, a blouse or a jacket or a pair of pants or what have you and stuff like that, you know, using their art to weave and create and make and mold and fashion and stuff like that, you know. And so, you know, just some, you know, things 10,000 years old in the region of Anatolia, Turkey, that would be Northwest Turkey. They have these names they use like Asia Minor and whatnot, stuff like that. Huge country. Monuments found there. Syria, Palestine, Iraq. And a lot of these names that have come about have been mentioned, you know, written about in the Bible. You know, the Assyrian Babylonian civilizations, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, which would be, you know, modern Iraq. One of the more famous of these would be what we refer to now as the Sumerian civilization. The Bible refers to this region as Mesopotamia, the land between the two rivers. And so these different groups that had been able to establish kingdoms, you know, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, these different black tribes. These were not white tribes at all, period. The Europeans, let me say this again, a fact that the Europeans had nothing to do with these civilizations, period, straight up. And this is no, these terms that they like to use, romanticizing and you know, just pseudo science and what have those are fact. Their own studies, archaeologists. It's just the whole point of denying it. To use, I guess, word I love to use, subterfuge. You know, trickery. You know, to turn something inside out, make you wear a pair of pants and have you thinking it's, you know, that you're wearing the pants the right way, you know, stuff like that. But these are ancient civilizations. The Chaldeans, this name had become sort of like a, you know, a blanket light. You know, over time, you know, some of these black nations' names had become, you know, instrumental in these regions, so they would whole regions sort of become like the Chaldeans, so to speak, and these 18th century European scholars and historians would use the name the Chaldeans when in actuality they were referring to the Sumerians or the Babylonians and stuff like that, you know, the southern Chaldeans and the northern Chaldeans. But it was a place called Chaldea in what would be the equivalent of Kuwait, along the Persian Gulf. Kuwait was just formerly a part of Iraq. You know, this was, you know, formerly a part of Iraq due to the politics, and that's another subject. But to give you an idea of where the Chaldeans were, black people, Syria, Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, this would have been the equivalent of ancient Canaan. You know, the Canaanites of the Bible, you know, that the Bible writer had mentioned and wrote about. And these several descendant branches of the Canaanites, you know, the Amorites, the Arameans, the Phoenicians had become, you know, the more famous of these descendant tribes. The Canaanites were one segment of branch of the black and brown indigenous multifaceted nations that lived in that part of the world, the Syro-Palestinians, Some people may understand the word Palestine from the word Philistine. You know, the Philistines in the Bible are, you know, necessarily given a, you know, a really, you know, like it's not really a pretty picture painted by the Philistines, but understanding the evolution of this or the beginning of this term, its history, going back several thousand years. The original Philistines were black people, you know, and that's a fact. I'm just naming, like, you know, going over, like, these regions and stuff. You just give an idea. What is known as the Arabian Peninsula, the ancient Arabian people. When we speak in these terms today in America, you know, some of us say Arabs, you know, the Arab on the, you know, the corner store in the black neighborhood and whatnot, you know, the Arab community, the Arab American community that come under attack when 9/11, when the CIA orchestrated Cheney-Bush gang, 9/11 thing was orchestrated and went down, and the white Americans, the European Americans, they were seething with anger and they wanted blood, and so they was attacking the nearest, you know, Arab American that they could find. You know, just to give you an idea of these terminology, but the Arabian Peninsula, pre-Islamic civilizations, and we'll, you know, to this, when we say pre-Islamic, you know, their Prophet Muhammad, who popularized Islam, you know, this Islamic expansion, you know, and what you see today, why, you know, Arabia is pretty much a Muslim, you know, oriented society. They follow the Quran, you know, and whatnot. But these thousands of years before Muhammad, there were ancient black civilizations there in that part of the world. The more famous ones was known as the Sabians, you know, the Sabians and the Mannaeans. The Sabians, according to legend, had produced the Queen of Sheba. And those of us understand and know the Bible know that the Queen of Sheba, the Queen of the South, had visited, legend, you know, according to legend, the King of Ethiopia and whatnot, you know. King Solomon, you know, who was a black king, you know, gifted, you know, blessed, you know, and this was the ancient Arabian civilization thousands and thousands of years ago. The day that area would have been what we know as Yemen today, in southern Arabia, and as a matter of fact, if you go to Yemen, you can see the remnants of the black indigenous population that still exists in Yemen. If you, or if you want to take your phone or your laptop or whatever and pull up a search engine, Google, Yahoo, whatever, and other ones that people use, and then type in Yemen or Yemenites, you know, and images, you can see images of, you know, the still indigenous black people that live there. And we're gonna squash this thing about what defines one as black, you know. As I said, the part of the political education process is, in the sense, is taking our minds back from the Eurocentric view of the world, and so part of that is going to be taking our minds back from how someone else defines us as what is black in terms of physicality, hair texture, nose size, lip size, and complexion, all that type of shit. You know what I'm saying? But these were the ancient black, these are the descendants of the people who are still there, contrary to some of these scholars, so-called Middle Eastern scholars, experts in Arabian society and civilization. And part of their goal and objective is to deny that those people are the original, and, you know, some instances where they try to take certain of them and say, oh, these are recent populations of blacks who were descendants of slaves from the Muslim slave trade. You know, that is only true to a certain extent. In other words, if you had 10 of them in a room, maybe one of them, you know, in terms of the population size, yeah, may have been a descendant of the modern day African people who were snatched up or who were brought in to these so-called Muslim societies and kingdoms. And I know the Europeans, the Christians, in particularly, they get an orgasm off of that when you can point out that they weren't the only ones, that they weren't the only religious group. As a matter of fact, the Muslims had enslaved, Africans before the Christians and whatnot, that's another subject. But, in that part of the world, and this region of Southern Arabia is actually damn near darn near connected to modern-day Ethiopia. And so that was the bridge from whence our ancestors had left out of the Eastern Corridor and moved up into what is now Southern, Southwestern Asia to populate that part of the world hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years ago. The archaeological record doesn't lie. The anthropological record doesn't lie. It just comes down to a matter of who's controlling the narrative, who's in charge, or who's in possession of all the skeletal remains that have been found and have been logged in these universities and these facilities and whatnot, and now that they're using this DNA shit, to confuse people, generalize the name, nondescript names. We're gonna cover that too. But these are ancient black civilizations. Long before what the Muslims are famous for when it comes to one of their rituals that most people may know Muslims when they see this huge demonstration of Muslims circling around this monument, that contains the Kaaba stone, in one part, in one corner of the building, and this ritual, where this annual pilgrimage referred to as the Hajj, it is a sort of like a requirement, so to speak, that every Muslim at least once in his lifetime was, make the Hajj to Mecca and partake in this ritual where they circle around this rectangular like type monument and go around it seven times. And if you can get a chance, when you reach this corner where this Kaaba stone, the sacred black Kaaba stone is, to touch it as you go around it seven times. This is a ritual. This ritual that you see today, is documented in video, what have you. This is a ritual that has nothing to do with the present day Arabian society or the general appearance of, when you say Muslim, pale to light skin Arabs, ones that you go in your city, in your town, neighborhood, and you go into a store and get make some groceries or whatever, but this is a ritual that had been around way before Prophet Muhammad, several thousand years before Prophet Muhammad, and this is evidenced by some of the archaeological work that was conducted in Arabia, where they discovered these stone, upright stones, and the ground was worn down around in a circle, and they could tell that because of this ritual, they had discovered that this was the Tawaf that's being practiced today. And this Tawaf was founded by the original inhabitants of that land, Central Arabia, Southern Arabia, and that's a fact. And so this is the ancient civilization there. This part also where, the Sabian civilization was, the Greeks and the Romans had learned of this fabulous history. And so they began to take Arabia and part it off into names. And that was due to like geographical landscape. In other words, a huge chunk of Arabia, by now had become, is known as be like a desert-like type land, a barren-like type, you know, this perception. But the landscape was much different back then. But this part here, in and around Yemen, was referred to as Arabia Felix. And the word Felix is the equivalent of the word happy. So this was Arabia the Happy, where they had another Arabia, Arabia Petraea, Arabia Petra. And Petra is the word for rock. You see, and so there's a difference in geography and stuff, you know. But that was that part of the world. But that, like I said, that's one of the more, the most famous. And, of course, people know the land of Sheba, you know, Saba, you know, and how the queen of the south, as is recorded in the Bible, had visited King Solomon, you know. The Rastafarians, you know, take it further, you know, and, you know, that Haile Selassie, you know, King Menelik, these kings are the bloodline of this conjoining of the Queen of the South and King Solomon, one of his wives, you know, which is the descendant kings, which ended up being King Menelik the first, the second, and Haile Selassie and stuff like that, you know. So that's Arabia, ancient Arabia. There's also other lesser known groups such as the Amorites, the Hittites and stuff like that. These, of course, you know, in Syria, Palestine, the Hittites are more north, like in, let's say, you know, in around these regions are connected, like in other words, you know, like Turkey is north of, let's say, Iraq, Syria. Syria is left of Iraq and so forth. Iraq is one of the hugest countries in east. Next door to Iraq is Iran. You know, we talked about the Elamite civilization, which is the equivalent of Iran in and around that region. You know, those are the ancient civilizations back then. Now, you know, you go to the for those who are Bible enthusiasts, you know, like I said, you know, if you go to the 10th chapter of Genesis, this was the biblicist way of showing and explaining that all of these civilizations were the product of black people, of people of color, black and brown indigenous people. In other words, the person who wrote Genesis, to my understanding, what I remember from being a child or a teenager at least, was that Moses had written the first five books of the Bible, you know, which means Moses also wrote about his own death and where he was buried at also, which would be rather incredible. You know, you would have to be a prophet, I guess, you know, to determine all of that, you know. But anyway, you know, according to 10th chapter of Genesis, when it talks about, you know, Noah, his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japhet, and unto them were sons were born after the flood. Just read, you know, the beginning of chapter 10. It speaks about the, you know, Japhet and his children. Then it goes down to Ham. And this is where the Bible writer starts to explain these civilizations that I talked about in these regions, where he began to talk about the sons of Ham. Ham is the equivalent of Africa, particularly ancient Kemet, which the Greeks, in modern terms now, refer to as Egypt, from the Greek Agyptos. All right. So this is Africa, Ham, the father of all African nations. So we don't need, you know, anthropologists, and we don't need some geneticist, some DNA expert, or some ethnologist, you know, somebody who's in the ethnology and what's your ethnic. We don't need that. The Bible is clearly saying right here that the father of all Africans is Ham. And so we know it's a no-brainer that Ham was black. Okay. And so much so to the point, there's, you know, this thing where they speak about what is the origin of the word Ham. And so they're quick to point out, well, Ham is a Hebrew term. There are those of us who understand that the Hebrews had been copying words and things of that nature from their cousins, the Egyptians. Okay, and so a lot of this terminology that they're claiming is Hebrew is actually ancient Kemetic terms, you know, older terms, because the older brothers, the older, you know, groups were there. So the word Ham, which actually understanding how these in the languages is actually the word Cam. It's a KH, it's like a double letter, you know. This Hebrew sign, which would be the equivalent of it, but the K is silent, and so it gets left out, and so it's Ham. So in ancient Kemetic, there's a term where it refers to as Cam, which also means black. And so whenever they were trying to face, you know, something was black, like the black land, the black people. And I'm going to tell you now, these white Egyptologists, so-called, and all these experts on ancient Kemet and have been battling, you know, our black brilliant scholars for the past, let's say, at least 80 years, probably 70, 80 years, you know, have always tried to refute that when the Egyptians were talking about black, they weren't talking about themselves. They were speaking about the black soil due to the Nile flood, this rich soil that gets left behind. Of course, you know, they say the black is better sweet than juice, you know, the melanin that's in the earth, which reduces things, right? And so this is what they stick to. But there's another reference in the same word where you see the black crocodile, a piece of the crocodile's black skin had become a symbol, the symbol of the equivalent of the word. So in other words, when they wanted to say black wood, they would put this symbol for the crocodile skin, a piece of crocodile skin, next to the word for wood, and you would read it as black wood. Okay, and so there's a inscription where they have a man and a woman, and this animal skin is next to it. And there's a plural where they wrote, like in Hebrew, to pluralize terms. When the Hebrew speaking people wanted to pluralize a word, they put the letter M on the end. And some of us are familiar with the word Elohim, which has an M on the end, right? Now, in ancient Kemetic, the M was turned up right side up. Some would say upside down. So in other words, if you took an M and turned it upside down, what would you have? You'd have the letter W. So in other words, these were two loops, or three marks that they were using to pluralize their terms. So you had the black crocodile skin, the people, the man and the woman, and whenever they placed a man and a woman next to each other, this they were trying to say the people, us, we, our, you know, we, us Egyptians, us people in Kemet, right? And then they would pluralize the term and say the people. So when you read it, it says the black people, and this is what the people in Kemet had referred to themselves in one instance, the black people, contrary to what they'll try to get you to believe. This is the inscription that they will keep you from, okay? But just to give you an idea, the terminology is how it works, right? So if Ham was black and he had two brothers, okay? Now, the nations, the civilizations, the kingdoms that I named, we have to leave the Sumerians out for right now. The Babylonians, ancient Babylon, which was a great kingdom. Some of us, well, we're familiar with this kingdom, and in the Bible, at some point, it doesn't have a good reputation. Of course, when it speaks about, you know, Babylon and, you know, in the reggae world, where it speaks about Babylon, the destruction of Babylon. The Rastafarian brothers believe that America is the modern-day Babylon, and I concur. the evilness, the wickedness, and what have you. But the archaeological record, independent of that, proved that ancient Babylon was a great kingdom. It was a great civilization. They had the arts and the science and whatnot and stuff. As a matter of fact, a lot of stuff in Babylon, the Greeks had gotten, and it had been passed down through the centuries. You know, this was called the Code of Hammurabi. And this Hammurabi, when you look at these codes, and you can see the Ten Commandments in these codes of Hammurabi, and this was a black king. There's these carvings in stone of what is believed to be Hammurabi. You could take a magnifying glass. They were that precise. They could take a piece of stone 3 inches square, right, and carve a human image in it and put it in the animation, right, give it, you know, features. And in some of these artifacts they found, you could take a magnifying glass and look at it, and you can see the wide nose, the full lips, and whatnot, you know. But you could just look at the image, just period, and just see, you know, this was an African by its contours, you see. And so that's one of the famous black kings of Babylon, Babylonia. So this is Babylon, but the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Phoenicians, you know, of course, those are the ancestors of the Phoenicians, right? These were all black nations, and the study of linguistics, language, for the past, let's say, 200 years, at least, they've come to discover, the Sabians, the Minans, the ancient Arabians, and also, right? So what they did was found out that they spoke related languages, spoke related tongues, and so therefore we know that they was cousins, you know, from a linguistic point of view. That's just one of the ways. And if you can apply the other sectors of it, and you can, I mean, it's a no-brainer. But due to white supremacy, you are not going to be allow this type of understanding when we say black, you know, ancient black nations, right? But what they did was they coined the term Semitic. And this has been a term that has been of buzz lately due to a young brother who wants to understand and know his history and culture, where he came from, what his people has done. Brother Kyrie Irving. And our hats go off to the young brother. And we support his attitude, his stance. It may not be perfect, but we support his attitude, his stance as a young man. So this charge of anti-Semite. And so, where did they get the term Semite from is the question. The term Semite appears to have derived from Shem. So it's actually Shemite. But another instance of case of where the letter, the Hebrew sign for this S, is actually an SH. But the S gets left out of the pronunciation, and it's Semite. Okay, so what these so-called Semitic experts have done, whenever they have to cover for these archaeologists who found these ancient buildings and remains and temples and tombs in what they now refer to as the Middle East, then these Semitic scholars have to cover for them and come in and say, oh, these were the Semitic people. These were the Semites, okay? And so they'll say, for instance, Semitic civilization, African civilizations. Now, what's wrong with the term? What's wrong with, like, for instance, there's only two groups of people in this country that is described by color. Everybody else is named after a language or a region. Let me say that again. Out of all the so-called ethnic groups here in America, there's only two of them that is described by a color, black and white. Everybody else is Arab American, East Asian, Latino, Mexican, Pacific Islander, okay, or Hispanic. What is Hispanic? Hispanic is what? Derives from Hispaniola. How did Hispaniola come about? When Christopher the Dumbass came here and he renamed the portion called Hispaniola in honor of what? Spain. So this is how they become, oh, the Hispanic community. There's no Hispanic race. There are black Hispanics, pale-skinned Hispanics, and mixed Hispanics. And the only reason why they speak in Spanish is because of the conquistadors, those who have conquered in the name of Spain, claim the land, the territory, practice genocide, and so forth. But we're the only ones, black and white. And so this is a similar tactic that these so-called Semitic scholars use to keep you from understanding that these Semitic people were black. So you have to force their hand whenever you get a chance, and you have to put it on the table. Okay? So this is what we're doing. And the Bible, from one point of view, establishes that these Semites were black Semitic-speaking people, which means the Phoenicians, you know, the Canaanites / Phoenicians, the Amorites, and so forth, the Arameans, and there's another, you know, this other group, the Arameans, right? Now, these names are in, you know, the table of nations in Genesis, you know, chapter 10. And so the Bible writer goes into it specifically. So as we have explained that Ham was black, then his brother Shem was also black. Now, there may be some discrepancy here when it said, well, if Ham was black and Shem was black, then what about their other brother, Japhet? Well, first of all, we know there couldn't have been a Japhet because there was no letter J back then. So all the names in the Bible that has a J couldn't have been no J. So it was something else. See, so these Bible scholars go intricately into these things like geographics, and they spend so much time and looking in the old maps and old regions. The Bible writer was pretty accurate. And so, but when they talk about Japhet, these appear to be European groups or tribes, you know, that he was talking about. So he was pretty much focusing on three groups. And we know that if these three groups in that part of the world, then we know that 67% of the people in this world was black people and a minority of whites. Coming from that perspective, okay? Now, we can get into that, and we'd have to go into such things as genetic deficiency, genetic depigmentation over a period of time to explain this pale skin phenomenon, right? This abnormality in terms of skin pigmentation, right? But we know that, you know, Shem was black. And so his sons, I had mentioned that his oldest son, the Bible writer refers to him as Elam or Elam. Okay, the children of Shem, Elam and Asher and Arphaxad and Lud and Aram. So these were black related tribes, cousins, who had moved on into what is referred to as West Asia. The land of the Arameans has been fixed in and around Syria, East Syria, West Iraq, in that area there, the Arameans, a region called Aram Naharim, which is a plural term, and so forth. We know that the Elamites are black, their monuments, the portrayals of them in stone, the physical portrayals of them shows them to be a strongly curled, woolly head, wide nose, full-lipped people. So if the Elamites are black, by that evidence, we know that the father had to have been black too. So therefore, there's no Semitic race in terms of modern day, because you have a group of people who claim to be Semitic, who are pale skin, and in other instances, in and around the Mediterranean Sea, these northern African countries, other groups of people who had been so-called Jewish. And you can look at some of them and see a mixture, you know, but also in some of these, in and around these regions, there are white groups where, you know, white people like to get suntans. And of course, you know, it's a fact that the environment, you know, also plays a factor in your physicality. But, you know, we don't have to get into that, you know, just for the record, because we don't leave no stone unturned. We have nothing to hide, you know. We going off what's there, not on some imagination or taking something and spinning it to our own liking. The records are there, you see. So these were, as I said, black Semitic-speaking people, which proved that the white Jewish population today is a total different species in terms of bloodline, in terms of ethnicity. So somehow, some kind of way, the white Jewish population today had become Jewish, oriented, leaning towards what they refer to today as Judaism. And as I said, there couldn't have been no Judaism back then. There couldn't have been no Judah back then, because there was no J back then. That's on another subject. I just wanted to just, you know, mention that because this would include the Hebrews into that mixture, for the simple fact that when they take Hebrew and compare it to Aramaic, the language is like twins. And they took Hebrew and compared it to Arabic, and you see that Arabic and Hebrew are like twins, and so forth. They took Arabic and placed it next to another black nation that I didn't mention, the Akkadians, who were in the northern half of southern Iraq, which would have been ancient, which is known as ancient Babylonia. These were the Akkadian kingdom. Their famous kings, Naram Sin, who lived over 4,000 years ago. In these books, I had mentioned one of these books, these big, huge art books that are in some of, if not all of these libraries. You know, a lot of those scholars had went there, and, you know, they recorded a lot of stuff. They took a lot of pictures and whatnot. And so there's this book that's been produced that shows some of these kings that ruled Babylonia, the Sumerian kings. And you've seen the Sphinx. We can look at the Sphinx and tell the Sphinx if he would have been living during the day in the 50s and 60s, would have been called nigger because of that wide nose and full lips and his bone structure. But in some of these books, there's these replicas of Sphinxes that were made in Babylonia, Sumeria, and extraordinary pieces of artwork. I have a book here. I was trying to see if I could find the actual photo, but it's extraordinary artwork. And here you have these head of a man, body of a lion. The facial features given to these kings, wide noses and full lips, you know, straight out, undeniable. And we're not going to be, you know, get so drunk off of that wide nose, full lip thing, because that's the one thing that the Europeans have used against us to separate the rest of us from the other blacks, you know, who don't have the wide nose and the full lips. And so, oh, well, yeah, that's a Negro right there, but these are not Negroes. They're Hamites. You know, the games that they play, you know. And this is what they do to try to steal Kemet from them. You know, they call the Egyptians Hamites. They wouldn't call them Negroes, you know, stuff like that. But the Bible clearly contradicts them, that all of us are Hamites. Ham is the fault of all the African nations. They are wide-nosed, full-lip Hamites. They are thin-lip, thin-nosed Hamites. They are curly-head Hamites. And if you go into India, you'd see some straight-head Hamites. You know, we're going to get into that, you know. So we covering that, these ancient black civilizations. If there was a group that lived known as the Israelites, the descendants of Abraham, their forefather, if they actually lived and existed, they would have been black. They were not white. They were nowhere near white. And it was black as the midnight. You take a look at Abraham and where Abraham was born. You know, Abraham had to have a ancestry. And as I said, you know, his ancestry goes back to his black forefathership. And Abraham was born and was referred to as Ur of the Chaldees. This is one of the great cities of ancient Babylonia, the Sumerians, who appears to have began recording before the other black groups that were there. So you had Sumerian-speaking blacks, and you had Semitic-speaking blacks, which were the Akkadians. And these were two black groups that lived side by side in southern Iraq. Okay? One minute you see the Sumerians or appears to, you know, be heading things, and the next minute you see the Akkadians appear to be heading things and whatnot. You know, there was no annihilating one another, you know. And these were ancient black nations. And the artifacts, the records, the recordings that they've left thousands of inscriptions, and the Sumerians left thousands of them. There's a vehement attack on the Sumerians not being black. You know, there's many ways, numerous ways. It's not difficult. It's not hard at all to prove that they were black. The whole point that we need our people to understand is that it's not on us to prove the Sumerians is black, nor the Egyptians. It's on them to prove that they weren't black, because all the facts, all the records are there. You know, it can be painstaking to some of us, which is referred to as psychological warfare, you know, due to the fact that the Europeans control the media. They are the proprietors of pretty much the media, you know, national media. They have the ability to produce film, and they've done an excellent job in deceiving us through the film industry, racist Hollywood. Whenever they make a movie about the Egyptians or the Israelites or Moses and what have you, they pull out a whole slew of white actors and actresses. And they began back in the 50s, the 60s. You know, using Elizabeth Taylor and Charlton Heston to play Moses and Cleopatra and so forth. You know, when Michael Jackson produced his Remember the Times video, which is an extraordinary video, a lot of resources went into making that video, where he used Eddie Murphy to play the king, and he used the martyr Iman, who was actually from East Africa to play the queen. And most of us don't really realize, but it was in and around there that Michael Jackson's problems began. That is when Michael Jackson's problems began. One of the persons who was a so-called child back then, who Michael Jackson was accused of sexual whatever, misconduct whatever, he actually has done a interview. A childhood friend of mine had sent it to me, been I guess about going on a couple of weeks ago, but he's a young man now, and someone had interviewed him, and he comes forward after all of this time and said that it was his mother who had come up with that ploy because Michael Jackson was rich and that they could get money out of him, you know. And he had told his mother that, but he never did me anything. You know, yes, this is on, I believe, on YouTube. You can find it, you know. But just wanted to add that and go to show you how vehement racist Hollywood is in maintaining the myth of white Egyptians. You know, they're willing to do whatever it takes. And when Michael Jackson had put that on a map because he had an audience, a worldwide audience, you know, so the video had brought out a lot of things psychologically, and that did a lot of good for black people in particular. You know, everybody was black in the video. You know, so he was making a political statement. But it's in and around there that Michael Jackson's problems began, which led to his death, contrary to what the state would have you believe. But yeah, so here we have black Egyptians, black Hebrews, you know, the pretty much ancient black world. You know, Europeans don't really come into the picture basically until Greece. You know, at some point, yes, there were a influx of whites, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 years ago who had begun to trickle down from what it appears the north, off into Iran, Turkey, and India. But Iran seems to have been sort of a hub. And this is as a result you see today when you look at Iran, you know, you normally see or you're shown, you know, like the pale-skinned Muslims, but there's still a segment of indigenous black people that exists in all of these countries. And for some reason, some region you're around the Gulf, you know, the southern, most southern parts of these countries. And with that in mind, from West Asia, from Syro-Palestine, as far as India, via Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and some other countries, this entire region, at some point in time, had been given the name Ethiopia. I had mentioned the story of Andromeda and King Cepheus and his queen Cassiopeia, and that they had put up their daughter for a sacrifice too because they had pissed off the nymphs. She had it. And so they had to appease the nymphs. You know, these beautiful sort of like beings like. So they put her up. And he was referred to as the king of the Ethiopians in this place called Joppa. So that region there was known as Ethiopia. The Bible has some instances where it's mentioning Ethiopia's plural, not in Africa, but in Asia. There's a king who's actually mentioned one of the sons of Ham. And I'm going to try to take my time because there's so much. But one of the sons of Ham is Cush. And so Cush is pretty much, you know, a reference to the black people, right? There was an ancient Cush back then in Africa, right? And so the Bible writer had wrote about a king named Cushan. In other words, Cush with an A and an N on the back. Cushan Rishathaim, that was his name. Okay? Even though his name may not have meant been positive, but the Bible writer referred to him as the king of Mesopotamia. So even the Bible writer had sense enough to know that these kings in Mesopotamia was black. And he's mentioned in the, what, the third chapter of Judges? The third chapter of Judges, you know. So that's one instance. You know, the Cushites, you know, the ancient black people. Any Bible dictionary will tell you, speak about the Cushites. And they will also tell you that there were two people in the Bible are called Cushites. Now, where it talks about Moses' wife was called the Cushite. So Moses had married a black woman, you know, and so forth. The Greek equivalent of this term Cush was, of course, Ethiopia. We mentioned that. You know, so it was the Greeks who had saw, you know, these people who had heard that there were black, dark people in these regions. And they had heard as far as India that the people were black, and so they had wrote about them. Their own father of history, Herodotus, they referred to him as the father of history. Yeah, their father of history, you know, which wasn't but a short while ago, but to them is ancient, you know, 2,500, 400 years ago. To them, that's ancient. You know, to them, you know, came and went, pretty much. You know, so to Herodotus, Kemet was an ancient old civilization. To him, it was old, ancient old, you know. So, but anyway, he had recorded, these black nations, you know. The instance where he talked about the blacks in India, and he said there were Ethiopians there too, several tribes of them. You know, and the other ones had described them too. And in some instances, they were just saying that the only difference between the Western Ethiopians and the Eastern Ethiopians, which is that the Eastern Ethiopians had straighter hair. And, you know, thinner nose or what had, they weren't so snub nosed as the Western Ethiopians. Now, that's one understanding of the Western and Eastern Ethiopians. This was in Asia. But across from the, when you look at the Red Sea, to the left, what would be the West Coast, it would be East Africa. So on the East Coast, it would be Southern Arabia. And so they had also spoke about those being Western and Eastern Ethiopians on opposite sides of what they refer to as the Eritrean Sea, which was just another term for red. And that was another explanation or understanding of the two Ethiopian nations who were sundered in twain when it came to far as India, Syria, Palestine, and in between. And what they mean by sundered in twain is this expression which means where the sun rises and when the sun sets, over in the east and over in the west. And that was the only thing that really separated them. Okay. But in these places like Southern Afghanistan, there's another country called Khuzestan, you know. You see these old records, these old remnants, where they spoke about these black tribes that still existed from the coast of East Africa all the way to the South Indian coast and all the way across. And so this is what they obviously understood. And so the Bible writer was accurate. He was accurate when it came to that. It spoke about Elam, and that was Iran. And to get to India, if you was traveling that way, you can take the Iranian route to get to India. Okay. And so he was talking about the blacks from Iran unto the blacks in Syria, Palestine, which would have been the indigenous inhabitants referred to as the Canaanites, you know. And they were all black. There was nothing white about them. You know? And that's that part of the world. That's something else I want to also mention before it slipped my mind. When it comes to Ur, these cities that were mentioned in what would have been Babylonia, which would have been the cities that were built by the Samaritans, right? So if you look at Genesis, where it goes on about the children of Ham, right? So you look at the children of Ham, it starts to tell you Ham's probably greatest son. And this is where the Bible writer goes to explain that the indigenous people of what the white man now calls the Middle East had come from Cush. Here's the sentence. Okay? This is in it started verse 7. And it just goes on down, right? Cush, Mizraim, Put, or Put, P-H-U-T, and Canaan. Those are his four sons. Okay. And then you get to look at the sons of Cush. And the first sons appear to cover Arabia, right? Seba, Havilah, and so forth. Sheba, right? And then Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babylon, Erech, Akkad, the Akkadians, Calne, and in the land of Shinar. That was another name for basically Mesopotamia. All right. Then it goes on to say, out of that land went for Asher. And this is the forefather of the Assyrians. So the Bible writer was clearly indicating that all of these nations and kingdoms were black people, and they built at Nineveh. This is one of the most famous cities of the Assyrians. In the 18th century, the 1760s, you know, somewhere around that, 1760s, 70s, on into the 1800s, 1810s, 20s, and 30s, these travelers, of course, they were Europeans, you know, on these ventures and stuff, you know. Some of them had went into what was ancient Assyria, and they found these monuments and realized that this was this place in the Bible referred to as Nineveh. You know? And so they seen these huge carvings on the wall and whatnot, you know. This was the ancient black civilization there. So the Bible shows that these were Cushites, you know, the ancient kingdom of Arabia and so forth, Syria, Palestine, you know, Cushites. And then it goes on and speaks about Mizraim, and even Mizraim had a posterity that not only stayed in Africa, but it also ended up going out, you know, the land of the giants. And then it goes on to talk about the Patrusim and the Catluhim and so forth, out of whom came Philistine and the Castorim. The Philistines, this is the Philistines that I had mentioned, from whence Philistine, this is how the region Palestine got its name. So here you had cousins and various black tribes that intermingled with one another. And they were cousins, according to the scripture. There was no white people involved, period. And then the Catharim is also, has been debated that these were the ancient people who had come and migrated and went out into the Mediterranean seas, the Aegean Sea, and populated what I had mentioned earlier about the land of Crete, In other words, the famous Minoans, the famous Minoan civilization, you know. And so these are migrations of black people that went out and populated these regions and built these kingdoms and civilizations, you know. And so we've covered West Asia. We've tampered some with India, which is where we're heading. The record there, let's see what we're looking at. Okay, we got enough time. So on into India. And let me say this too with the Sumerians, by the way. The Sumerian language, what they like to do is tell you that there's no language in existence right now in the world anywhere that's related to the Sumerian language. It is a language that has no antecedents or no descent, none of that shit. Like they just popped up onto the planet, built all this stuff that they found that's 6,000 years old, you know, and just disappeared, didn't leave anything behind, no nothing. And that has given room to these alien theorists, freaks. So if you look on the History Channel, this is what you'll see. So they want you to believe that since there's no record to show before them or after them and whatnot, then they must not be from here. They came from outer space with this technology and knowledge, and they shared it with the people that was here, and they gave them the knowledge, and they built this civilization, an ancient Sumerian civilization. And then they go back in the Genesis. And they pull out this story, which is in Genesis, you know, about the, how the story goes, and the, something about the this group came and made it with the women or something like that. It's in the scripture here. You know, well, the Sumerian, mind, ideas, brilliance, creativity, to create myths, stories, okay? They were very brilliant. You know, they created myths like they did in ancient Kemet. And one of these stories in particular that they created was a flood story, okay? Which is pretty much like the flood story of the Bible. And so these Sumerologists have drawn the conclusion that the writer of Genesis just copied the Sumerian flood story. You know, there's an ark, you know, and it landed, you know, whatnot. Yeah, it's there. But that's as far as they'll go with you. Yeah. So we have to do the math on our own, you know, and teach our children, our youth, who are under constant attack, and we wonder why they're out there on the streets, in the war within the war. You know, but the Sumerians have wrote, like I said, a lot of myths, a lot of stories. The Akkadians were great mythographers and stuff, you know. There's a story where Naram Sin, you know, probably the most famous king of the Black Akkadians, his mythographer or his mythologist or what have you, wrote an account of when he was born. You know, and there was a situation, and for his safety, he was placed in a basket that was made for his safety, and hidden in the basket, placed, you know, on the edge of the Euphrates River. What does that sound like? It sounds like the story of Moses when he was a child. Same story, same thing. So our people were doing these things, creating these stories. You know, this is our legacy. This is how great the Akkadians were, the Black Akkadians. You know, and their kings are, like I said, are statues and sculptures and pick them. You know, Black people, Black kings, you could look at their physique, you know, their physicality, and clearly see, you know, these are Black. There's a certain type of physique that Africans have, you know. you know, without the shirt on, you know, wearing the, you know, the bottom piece, you know, due to the hot ass temperature. And these are some of the sculptors, the same similar type wearing apparel that they wore back then that they still wear today in Africa. And then, like I say, you know, you take the language, you compare them, you see it's a black Semitic speaking people. But the trick is just keep calling them Semites. So if you say Semites, then in your subconscious, you will begin to think that they look like the Jews today. Because you say Semite. And the only reason why you know the word Semite is because somebody had so-called violated the Jews. You know, spoke out against them, you know, what have you. Like this documentary that I've never seen it. But I think from Hebrews or Negroes or something. And, you know, there's this thing where they're charged of making up these falsities and whatnot, you know, about the Jews worshiping this or this, that, blah, 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 so forth and so forth. And, you know, it's anti-Semitic, you know. So if you say Semite, you can't picture black people because your subconscious, you've been so bombarded with the word Semite, Semitic, your subconscious will think that they look like them. You see, so we're here tonight. We've shown that it has nothing to do with them. You know, we're pretty much doing what we think Kyrie Irving was doing, searching and going back in the knowledge and gaining, you know, disentangling things. This is fact. This is history. It has nothing to do with some group attacking. No, it's bullshit. We've been the ones that have been under attack. But they're never accused of being anti-black or anti-African or anti-Hamite, you know, because they're the ones who control the narrative, the storyline. You know, we're the Semites. A portion of the ancient black people were the Semites. And there are several people, groups today, that the original descendants of the Semites, right there in East Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, because those languages that are spoken there also belong to the Semitic branch of the black people, the Semitic black, the black Semitic speaking people that you go right there to Ethiopia and see, and on over into Yemen, and you can see the Semitic speaking Yemenite language there, the black people there. You know, so where does this Semitic language evolve at? They want to say, when I mean they, these linguists, these so-called specialist Middle Eastern scholars, you know, they want to say, oh, it began in Arabia. But if that's the case, then that means the Ethiopians must be from Arabia. And we're not foolish enough to believe that. And so, therefore, it ain't but one place that a portion of our people began to speak a branch-off language due to geography, creating another line of speech. And that could only have been in East Africa, in and around Ethiopia, the modern Ethiopia. The Ethiopia city that I mentioned this too, the Ethiopia that you see today is not the same Ethiopia that existed 6,000 years ago, that the Greeks referred to, which in the ancient Kemetic records was called something like Nubet. Nubet. And that word's N-U-B, and the U is pronounced like two O's. You know, this was south of Kemet. And the Kemet back then is not the same Kemet today. The Kemet back then, about half of southern Kemet belonged to the northern territory of Nubet, which became known as Nubia today. That was the ancient Nubia, which was part of ancient Kush from the branches that had moved up or down the Nile River. From the heartland, from Central Africa. Now, Some of these books when I was growing up learning to want to do what I feel you should keep doing, I became a product of it, wanting to learn and understand and know who I was, my history, like Kyrie's doing today, and some of these books that were written by what we can say honest Europeans, a few of them, who stuck out like a sore thumb. They were honest enough to admit that all these nations were black, specifically the Egyptians. And they had done a lot of research and had been very learned on these so-called ancient writers. And they had included them in their studies. And one of these European scholars was a Frenchman. It appears that the French appeared to be maybe the most honest out of all of them. But this French scholar's name, Constantin Volney or something like that. He had a long ass name. But, we just, C.F. Volney. He published his book in 1791, as a matter of fact, somewhere around 1793, 1791. Well, anyway, when he was going on about the original people, the ancient people who had been the founders of the arts and sciences, of course, he made a lot of people angry. He had to back up his argument, his claim, he had quoted one of these writers named Diodorus. Diodorus Siculus. Siculus is the word for Sicily. He was a Sicilian, in other words. But so he quotes what Diodorus says about the Ethiopians, the Cushites. When he says the Thebans, that's like the name the Greeks had corrupted from a name that was one of the most famous countries in the world that existed in southern Kemet. And so when he was talking about the Thebans, because the Greeks were talking about them, this is what he says, Diodorus says, and then some other authors where he talks about, let's see. He says, the Thebans consider themselves as the most ancient people of the earth and assert that with them originated philosophy and the science of the stars. Their situation, it is true, is infinitely favorable to astronomical observation, and that they have a more accurate division of time into months and years than other nations. And so then he goes on to say what Diodorus says of the Thebans, every other author and himself elsewhere repeat of the Ethiopians. Then he quotes him. This is what he says, Diodorus says, the Ethiopians conceive themselves to be of greater antiquity than any other nation, and it is probable that born under the sun's path, its warmth may have ripened them earlier than other men. They suppose themselves also to be the inventors of divine worship, of festivals, of solemn assemblies, of sacrifices, and every other religious practice. They affirm that the Egyptians are one of their colonies, and that the delta, meaning the most northern part of Kenya, where this water outlets spill into the Mediterranean Sea, when like the Nile River, which was formerly sea, became land by the conglomeration of the earth, the Arid country, which was washed down by the Nile. Then he goes on to talk about how they have a species of hieroglyphics like the Egyptians and whatnot. One for the inner crowd, the outer crowd, and that's where the Masons get their initiation rituals from, two types of understanding and whatnot. The Bible is written that way too. Two types of understanding, esoteric and exoteric, but when he was talking about the original people, he goes on to see.
where he talks about when they were in ancient Kemet. This is what Volney says in his conclusion. He says, there are people now forgotten, discovered while others were yet barbarians, the science of the arson, the elements of the arson science. A race of men now rejected from society for their sable skin and frizzled hair, founded on the study of the laws of nature, those civil and religious systems which still govern the universe. When this book was published in English and the publishers wanted to have it put out in America, publishers were okay to agree. And they put the book out, published the book in English. That part I just read, when they published the book in English, that was the part of the book that they deleted from his book, the part that I just read. This is back in the 1830s or somewhere up in there. They had published this book in the early 19th century here in America. If I'm not mistaken, the 1850s, 60s, or somewhere in there. But that's the part that they deleted out of the book because they didn't want, you know, black people to know that it was a white man from France wrote a book about our ancestors and admitted the truth. And so Volney and his other people in France found out, and they were furious. And so they told them, in so many words, you don't publish the book and put the part back, then you deleted our material, then there's no publishing the book at all, you know. And so this is one of the books. Now, as we move into India, we talk about the black civilization there, the people referred to as the Dravidians, who found their monuments, 6,000-year-old monuments, buildings. They had an actual drainage system for human waste, a sewage system. They built all of this stuff. You know, this was in India. What you see is Pakistan and whatnot, you know, regions were pretty much part of the same region as what was the ancient India back then. Because there used to be a West Pakistan and East Pakistan. And that was just pretty much part of the same region. And in and around there, you know, they found these monuments, buildings and whatnot. They found these scriptures and designs and drawings and, you know, whatever, you know, etched in the, not drawings, but just these sculptures, you know, sculpting into stone and whatnot, you know. This civilization is the parent of all the stuff that you see now today in India. The belief system, what they refer to as Hinduism, Buddhism. Buddha descended from the Sakya clan. The clan was one of the ancient black clans that had been in India for thousands of years, and what they know as Buddhism today, their founder, his title was the Buddha. Some people just say Buddha, but it was a title, the Buddha, which simply meant the enlightened one. And he had come from the Sakya clan. And when you were named, your name clan and then your name. So his name was Kiyamuni, M-U-N-I. You know, some people might say money, but that was his name, the Buddha, Sakyamuni, the Buddha. And so the Sakya clan, the Sakya clan, you know, from the Dravidians. What you see today is yoga, the practice of yoga, what he said it was referred to as the lotus position or the Buddha position. And people practice yoga and the meditations. The system, spiritual system of yoga, didn't start with the present day people that you see today. It's been around for thousands of years. It was a way of life. That position that you see, some of you may go to the like these riverfronts or lakefronts or parks where people like to go, and you'll see it. You see people out, whatever, you know, practicing yoga, what have you, meditating. In the Star Wars movies, They showed a little green creature, Yoda, sitting in what's called the lotus position. He has this power of clairvoyance, and he can read minds and levitate and all these kind of things, you know, whatnot. All of that came from the Dravidians. They were digging and digging and digging and digging. Until lo and behold, they found a little small, tiny sculpture. I think it's about 3 inches high, little tiny, small, little sculpture. And the artist was so precise that he had captured either 3 triplet individuals sitting back to back to back in the lotus position, like a triangle. And this is an extraordinary artifact. And these Indologists, you know, the Western scholars and archaeologists are pouring all the money, coming digging and tracking deals with the government about getting, you know, rights to dig and whatnot, you know, concerted effort. They saw this and had the nerve enough to ask, could, you know, yoga could have possibly come from the Dravidians? It's amazing. But they have to do that. They have to do it. You know, you can type up the word Dravidian in your search engine and just hit images. India, besides Africa, has the most diverse of the black tribes on this planet, next to Africa. You can go to India and see just about every facial feature of the indigenous black people on this planet. You will see strongly curled hair, dark-skinned black Indians, curly hair, black Indians, what they call frizzled hair, wavy hair, black Indians, and straight-haired, dark-skinned black Indians. Some have the wide nose and the full lips. Some do not have the wide nose and so forth, just like Africa today. Just like Africa today. And there's this story. The colonies that left Africa and ended up populating was referred to as India. That Osiris had left as a colony or head of the colony that traveled along the southern coast and on into what is known as India today. And if you do a comparative analysis between the images, the idea of the so-called god Osiris, and compare it to the indigenous belief system of the black people who are still there, in their belief system, and they're like twins. And the people who became Hindus adapted their system from the indigenous blacks, the Dravidians in particular, and the other various tribes who were indigenous. And so therefore, Hinduism, Buddhism are children from a psychological, spiritual aspect of the indigenous black people who spread around the world. And some of these ancient writers, like I said, they talked about seeing black people in India, and they referred to them as Ethiopians. There's a word called Kusha Dweepa, and Kusha Dweepa was a reference to India. And there's these divisions of India, these regions called Dweepa. It's some term that was used. Like we say today in our cities, in Brooklyn they have what's called boroughs, you know. In other regions they have what's called wards, precincts, and so forth. You know, these regions, these confederated regions that are split up, which makes up the whole country, the whole state. This is ancient India. In the so-called religious books of the Hindus, there are references which some of us can, you know, term as races. It's always been the
more white than those four that varieties have been denigrated due to their dominant features. But there was another white scholar named Godfrey Higgins that published a book called The Anacalypsis. He goes on to talk about, Noah and whatnot. And then at some point he says, when he speaks about, like I said, the religions that had popped up and whatnot, and then he gets talking about the Hindu and the Christian, the Hindu and the Buddhist belief. Some of us have heard of the Krishnas, the hair Krishnas and stuff like we've seen them, or we may have seen them out in public, head shaved with a little, patch of hair that hangs down and stuff like that. But this is what Higgins says. Then I should suppose that there have been various races of red or white, that the originals of all the gods have been of the black race, of the class of followers of Krishna. After the black race had become improved into the shape in which we find him, that the pontifical government did originally consist of this race, and that in the East, the entire population consisting of this race, it continues black, though for the reasons before given by me, it is improved in shape. But that in the West, to which it sent out numerous tribes, it mixed with the white races. Then he goes on. If we suppose man to have arrived at a high point of mental culture 500 or 600 years before the entrance of the sun into Aries, he's speaking astronomically. In other words, he's talking thousands of years ago. The calculation will show that this will give him time to have had a knowledge from astronomy of the approach of the comet in 29 centuries. In consequence of prejudice, for it really is prejudice against the Negro, or rather to say, against the possibility of a Negro being learned and scientific, arising from an acquaintance with the present Negro character. I admit with great difficulty the theory of all the early astronomical knowledge of the Chaldees having been acquired or invented by his race, and that the Chaldees were originally Negroes. And then he has another section, the same as I said, where he talks about there being two Ethiopias. And he goes on and he speaks about it. This is Godfrey Higgins in a book titled Anacalypsis, published in 1832. This is another rare white man who was able to get over himself, get over his whiteness, and admit to the fact that there were two Ethiopians. One was in the East, one was in the West. The one in the East was Indian. It had also had received the name Ethiopia, the Kushites, the original people. And that's what he was talking about. And then he starts to talk about all these statues that these travelers had been finding in different places in India, these statues of the Buddha. And he had said that these statues that he had seen, that had been reported, that he had saw, that other travelers had seen. He had said these statues had been those, this is what he says, the religion of Buddha of India is well known to have been very ancient. In the most ancient temples scattered throughout Asia, where his worship is yet continued, he is found black as jet, with the flat face, thick lips, and curly hair of the Negro. Several statues of him may be met with in the Museum of the East India Company. There are two exemplars of him brooding on the face of the deep upon a cord serpent. To what time are we to allot this Negro? He will be proved to have been prior to the god Chris, called Krishna. And he just goes on and on and on and on. Then he starts to talk about there were several Alexandrias, and on close examination we find two Ethiopians alluded to in ancient history. One above the higher or southern part of Egypt, other somewhere to the east of it, and as it has been thought in Arabia, the people of this latter are called Cushim in the Hebrew text, of the Old Testament, and Ethiopians by the text of the Septuagint or the Seventh, that they cannot have been the Ethiopians of Africa is evident from a single passage. Then he goes on, and it was debating. They debated. It was so prevalent that they would actually begin to debate whether or not the Bible writer was actually speaking about the Ethiopian Africa. It got that deep. You know, so this is the civilization as far as Central Asia and on over into China, where they found artifacts, you know, go back to 4,000, 5,000 years. And there's these, brass-like type, metal-like type sculptures, like kettles or teapots or what have you, you know, images of wide-nosed, full-lipped images of short men, which looks like very small, short people, you know. And these are the short people that you find in some of the islands in the Pacific Ocean, like in the Philippines, referred to as Negrito, which is a Spanish term, which means little people. And the word Negro is actually just a term, Latin Spanish term, which simply means black. It has no reference to hair texture, none of that. But the white races, Europeans, took the word Negro, flipped it into their own private monopoly to justify the treatment of African people once they brought us here to America. And so they're, by the Spanish understanding of the term, straight-haired Negroes, curly-haired Negroes, woolly-haired Negroes, frizzled-haired Negroes, and on into the Americas, where they found the oldest skulls, you know, come to the conclusion that these skulls, by comparative analysis, they were forced to admit that the skull was that of the Negroid people. And this skull was found in Brazil, 10 to 12,000 years old. And so we know that the indigenous people here in what is referred to as the Americas, but also part of the black and brown indigenous people of the earth. The multifaceted variety of black and brown indigenous persons. So there's no such thing as the Negro race being wide-nosed and woolly-haired with big lips. And then everybody else is something else. Their own term contradicts the type of treachery that they're willing to do, that they're willing to use. And the only reason why pretty much that you see the people are called Indians today, and I've mentioned this in the past, that this word had gotten out that Columbus had heard about travels to the east, to this place where they had seen dark-skinned people, and they had thought this place was a place called Sindh or Hind or India. And so when he had come here, he had saw these people who had reminded him what he had been told of reports of the people that were seen in India. And that is how they got to be called Indians. And he was only simply saying that these people were jet black. They were jet black and had straighter hair, you know, more so than the so-called woolly head variety. But there were more than one type of blacks that were here. You know, we can conclude that. You know, we got a few seconds. We want to say this was a good run, you know, a walk through history, ancient style. You know, part of our resurrection. You know, through being politicized, to taking our minds back and being in control of our own minds back into our own hands. And so we say stay tuned for another show next week, you know, in defense of the people radio. I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat Turner of People's Political Party, and my co-host, Brother Motherland, our National Minister of Defense, and our assault technician. You know, on the ones and twos, Sister Amino showing our